the Bengal Financial Literacy Show coming up next on KISU FM Radio with our host, Chris Chatwin, professor with the Idaho State University College of Business.
Support for KISU comes from Lookout Credit Union, the Southeast Idaho credit union that has the educational community in mind. It provides financial solutions to ISU students, faculty, staff, alumni, as well as local school district teachers, students, and many others. Lookout Credit Union currently has 2 branches and 7 ATMs on ISU's Pocatello campus for immediate access when required. Lookout Credit Union, formerly ISU Credit Union, continues the legacy of serving the educational community.
Welcome to this month's edition of the Bengal Financial Literacy Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Chatwin, coming to you pre-recorded from the KISU studio here at Idaho State University. I have with me once again Mr. Durwood Keith Bagley II. I have trouble saying.
Yeah, you do.
You say it for me.
Durwood. It's
Durwood.
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 Yeah. Durwood.
Okay.
Why are you making that face when you say Durwood?
We're going to blame it on me growing up in Canada and being unable to speak it that
Canadians
way.
Canadians are wonderful people.
They really
wonderful
are.
People. You know, let me share a little story about someone else who couldn't get that name right. Is that okay?
Was it your wife?
No. My wife can do pretty much no wrong. She's amazing. Haven't you met my wife?
I have not.
She's amazing. Everyone wonders why she married me. I mean, frankly, all of my friends, we all married up, right?
I definitely did. Better than Absolutely, without a doubt.
Yeah. Okay. Let me share a little story.
Okay, please do.
My wife and I were married in the year 2000. I'm not sure how many years ago that was now. 21 or something like that.
Well, yeah.
So in the year 2000, we were married. And it was a beautiful ceremony, right? Very, you know, beautiful.
Beautiful.
And quiet and lovely. And very respectful, and you know, her family was there, my family, my friends, and the person who was marrying us, who was performing the ceremony, was an elderly gentleman, and I think this was only the second marriage that he had performed, and he was quite nervous. And he was a lovely man, just absolutely wonderful, and he was nervous. I think more nervous than Danielle and I were.
Sure.
And he was trying not to use the notes that he had prepared during the ceremony. And so the first time that he said my name in this very kind of solemn, important, you know, pretty important day, I would say, pretty important little experience, he called me Dunwad Keith Bagley. And that's what happened. What you just did, like, I could hear my college friends.
This is that moment that you referred to in the last show, that you're going to say something, I'm going to fall back in my chair. And that is almost what happened right there.
Yeah.
Dunwad.
I'd prefer that you not tell anyone that, because that's private. So
okay.
Yeah. So
well,
if just no one knows about that,
well,
right? And I'd like
what?
To keep it that way.
From now on, you are no longer Dave to me. You are Dunwad.
So then he called me Durwin.
Ah,
and
finally
at the end, yeah, we're getting closer. Finally at the end, he called me Durward. So I wonder if I'm legally married or not. I'm not quite sure. But anyway, yeah, Dunwad is not my name.
Okay.
You can call me Durward.
Durward.
Yeah. As long as we're friends.
As long as we're friends.
Yeah.
Well, we've got to continue with our discussion. You know, we talked a little bit about some advanced directives and
powers of attorney,
estate planning,
yeah.
Powers of attorney. So I think we were having this profound conversation about probate and thought we better let the people know
We need to let the people know about probate.
Okay.
Probate is one of those words that strikes fear in the hearts of mortals.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what's the word that strikes fear in your heart?
I think you just, it's trying to say your name, actually.
Oh, it's Durward. So probate is the judicial process through which a court determines if a deceased person has a will and whether it's valid or not, and then makes that will enforceable and names someone to act on behalf of the deceased person. And that person's called a personal representative in Idaho. They're better known as an executor, but that's not the legal term.
Oh, really?
So probate is just the process. It's really a two-step process where you apply to the court. You send an application into the court and you explain to the court that either the deceased person had a will or did not have a will. That's the first part of a probate. if they did have a will, you're asking the court to validate that will, in essence, to make sure that it's actually a valid, enforceable legal document. And in Idaho, should I tell you what makes it enforceable?
Oh, you absolutely should. Okay. That is why we're here.
There's two types of wills in Idaho that will be valid. One is called a holographic will. Now, I know what you're thinking.
That sounds made up.
Yeah, it does. It does. I thought you were gonna get excited about that because you're probably a Star Trek kind of fan, aren't you? No one knows this because, again, this should be on TV. But Chris is actually wearing, in honor of William Shatner going to space, he's wearing his Star Trek Captain Kirk outfit as we speak. So I'm very much in awe of that outfit.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing.
Okay, a holographic will is a will that is, in essence, handwritten by the testator. So that's the person who's making the will, the person whose will it is. They handwrite the whole will themselves and they sign it.
Okay.
And that's a legal will.
Does there have to be a witness? Does it have to be notarized?
There does not need to be witnesses. It does not need to be notarized for a holographic will. Okay. Now, a holographic will has to be written entirely in that person's handwriting. It has to be the person who handwrites
it. Cannot
be typed. Okay. Correct. Has to be handwritten and signed. Now, I'm going to urge everybody. So this is the moment in the show where
we say, hey, you could do it this way.
You could do it this way.
But you probably should.
It's a nightmare. Yeah, okay. It's a horrible choice. Holographic wills are a nightmare.
Would it still be better than nothing?
Remember how last time we talked about if you don't have a will, the Idaho Code provides a plan for you?
Oh, yes.
I don't know, to be honest, if a holographic will is better than nothing.
Okay.
Because nothing might be better, actually. Holographic wills, the problem with holographic wills is that, and it may seem simple, right, to just say, well, I want my assets to go here. But there's all sorts of things that can happen in the intervening years that could change what change your plans or what you think you would want to have happen. Also, the way that a person writes their holographic will may just simply be incorrect. It may be confusing. We see that quite often where provisions are inconsistent or they don't make sense or they create more questions than answers. So holographic wills are a horrible idea.
Okay, so
I would say almost
don't
always.
Do a hol- –
yeah.
Just ignore everything Dave just said.
Yeah.
They don't exist. Don't do them. Or again, this goes back to us. We present options we allow people to make decisions for themselves.
Yeah. So one of the – I feel like the most important reason to pursue estate planning is to try to reduce the likelihood of your loved ones fighting after your death. If there's nothing else in all of these many podcast episodes likely that we'll discuss, that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is the reason to do your estate planning is to reduce the likelihood that your loved ones will fight after you die.
Makes sense.
The way to reduce the likelihood that your loved ones fight after your death is to make things very clear and to try to reduce the number of decisions that your loved ones need to make.
So what's the best way to do that?
Best way to do that is through a will, which we're going to talk about, or a trust. Sorry, I should say through a will or a trust. There's
a will
various
or
ways
trust.
To do that. But a bad way to do it is through a holographic will.
Okay. So eliminate that holographic will.
Do not do the holographic
will. Cut out these last 3 minutes.
Well, no, but people know.
No, okay.
They know now that there's – because I don't want to say there's – you only can do – there is a – it is a thing.
It is a thing. It exists.
It is a thing. It exists.
But
it's a bad thing.
It's a nightmare.
They turn into nightmares.
The good one is just called
just
a will
normal
then?
Last will and testament.
A last will and testament.
Yeah. And so for that type of will to be valid, it needs to be – so let's say it's typed, or someone else writes it other than the person whose will it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it has to be witnessed by two people and signed by the testator. The testator is the person whose will it is.
Okay.
Right? We're going to get more into wills here in a minute, but let's assume for now we're not going to get into the details of wills. We'll follow that up. We're really talking about probate. And so probate is that process through which the court decides, okay, is Dave's will, is it valid? Dave died 6 months ago. Is Dave's will valid?
Okay. That's what we call probate.
That's probate. And then the second part of probate, or the second most important part in my opinion, is the court says, okay, Dave's will says that his spouse, Danielle, is the executor of his estate. Or again, the legal term is personal representative. I'll probably say executor just because it's a term that many people are familiar with.
Yeah, that's what we hear.
Yeah.
You would think that that would be the official term.
You would think so.
But personal representative.
Yeah, personal representative. The PR. If you want to sound like you really know what you're talking about, if you go and talk with a lawyer or an accountant or somebody who's involved in probates, you'll just say the PR.
The PR.
Yeah. You know, the other thing about the term executor, since you are wearing your Star Trek outfit, I know you may not be a fan of Star Wars. Have you ever heard of Star Wars?
Yeah. I think I've heard of that one.
Okay, good. So do you know the name of Darth Vader's Super Star Destroyer?
No, I don't know.
Well, so I've only read it in books. I haven't heard it said out loud. So it's either the Executor or the Executor. But it's...
but it's spelled the
but
same.
But it's what they're both spelled the same, so I'm not sure which one it is. But that's Darth Vader's, that's his Super Star Destroyer. So
cool.
Yeah. It's very, well, actually, that would be an awesome podcast.
This is not the podcast you signed up for. So see, I've seen Star Wars.
That's awesome. I love it. Good work. Okay. So we talked about probate. Probate's that process. How much does probate cost? That's, I think, a worthwhile question.
Well, if I'm dead, it's going to cost me nothing, right?
That's true. Actually, that's a great point. When you're deceased, you're deceased.
So do I care if my loved ones fight?
The question that Chris posed is, should he care if the people he leaves behind after he dies fight or not?
And the answer to that is yes, I should.
Absolutely you should. If you care about them, yes. If you love them.
If I didn't, then obviously I would spend everything I had
nice
before.
Yeah. I think you should probably care. Wouldn't you want your loved ones to
I
care about you
do.
And whether you fight with your siblings or not?
Yeah, I certainly do. Yeah.
Okay. How much does it cost? So the cost of probate ranges, obviously.
Sure.
If you live in Idaho, which is where
we're broadcasting from, right?
Yeah,
where we
broadcasting
live.
From the Student Union Building at Idaho State University in the great city of Pocatello, which I love and is beautiful right now in the autumn. It's just an awesome place. In Idaho, a probate probably if both spouses have died, okay? Let's assume there's a married couple and both of them have passed away.
Okay.
Then a probate likely is going to cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,500 to maybe $4,000.
And that's generally. If there is a will.
Whether there's a will or not.
Okay.
Generally, it will cost that amount of money. And what that consists of is there's a small fee that the court charges to file the documentation. Mm-hmm. There's attorney fees. And there's the newspaper – there's a fee that you pay the newspaper to publish notice to creditors. And so somewhere in the neighborhood of $200, $300 of that is paid to the court, paid to the newspaper. The rest is attorney fees. In Idaho, generally, we just charge by the hour. I think there may be some attorneys who charge a flat fee sometimes for probate. Other states can result in super burdensome probate fees and costs.
Wow.
California, for example. So yeah. Let me share just a little story. There was a party who was deceased. They lived in Idaho. They had real estate here. They had other assets here. This is where they lived. And they also owned a piece of real estate in California, just a small little piece of real estate. And that little teeny piece of real estate was worth $8 million.
It is California.
It is California, right? Yeah. It's nuts. So anyway, the probate was opened in Idaho, which was the state of their domicile. And they were quite well off. And so the probate in Idaho cost $7,500. And there was a ton to do. But it was much more involved than what would normally be involved for most people. $7,500 for the Idaho probate. Most of that, again, attorney fees. The California probate cost $80,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Because the probate attorney at that time, and I'm not licensed in California. We should make that clear. I don't know if this has been changed since then or not, but the California laws in effect at that time allowed the attorney for the probate estate to charge a percentage of the value of the estate as their probate fee. And so, with an $8 million piece of real estate.
Yeah, that's.
Again, a probate. And if that piece of property had been in Idaho, it just would have been part of that, $7,500 that was paid, and it would have been straightforward and simple. So anyway, the cost of probate depends on where you're located. If you only own real estate in Idaho.
It'll just be in Idaho.
And things are pretty straightforward. Then, you'll only have to deal with the probate in Idaho and, you're looking at $1,500 to $4,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. So who's involved in a probate? There is, of course, the person who's named as the personal representative in the deceased person's will. So the deceased person is called the decedent.
Okay.
So whoever's in the decedent's will, who's nominated as the personal representative, or executor, they're certainly involved. The judge is involved. And then comes the question of, well, it may be family members who are involved. Family members may have been disinherited. Maybe someone, if they have a will, they leave their assets to their, you know, to someone else besides their family. So really, the people who are involved depend upon the planning that the decedent did before they died. So it could be family members, could be friends, you know, whoever's named. If there's no will, then it will certainly be family members who are involved in the probate. Now, how long does it take? Probates typically, again, let's say that there's a married couple and both spouses have passed away. A probate, once it's opened, we're going to use some technical language here.
Okay.
So we need to be precise, Chris. Is that okay with you?
That's absolutely okay with me.
All right. Once the probate is opened and the executor is appointed by the court, you cannot technically close the probate for at least 6 months. And people get confused with that and say, well, I can't do anything for 6 months. I can't distribute assets for 6 months. And that's not correct. It just means that you can't close it with the court for 6 months. So typically the timeline goes a little bit like this. Someone passes away and then a month later maybe to 2 months later to 3 months later, whoever's named as the executor comes into the law firm and says, okay, I need to probate, you know, my spouse's estate, or I need to probate my mom and dad's estate. And then we draft documents and the application, you know, the documents are going to be submitted to the court. The person signs it, they're submitted to the court, and the court usually takes somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 to 3 weeks to review those and then sign the appropriate paperwork, opening the probate, validating the will, and naming the executor as the, you know, appointing the executor to have the authority to act on the deceased person's behalf. So now we're into it, you know, about a month, let's say. We usually publish a notice to creditors in the newspaper. That takes some time for the process to just get going with the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And that notice to creditors, what it does is it's published in the newspaper and it gives creditors 4 months to come forward with their bills that need to be paid.
So if there's a mortgage or something,
Great question. So that notice to creditors, what it does is if a creditor does not come forward within that four-month period and file their claim with the estate, then they're barred from doing so. But it only covers certain creditors.
Okay.
So secured creditors are not covered. So if the bank has a lien against your car, or you know the bank that has a mortgage against your house, those creditors are not affected by that four-month creditor period.
Because it's already a secured.
It's already a secured transaction. Yeah, exactly. And in the probate code, there's a provision that also says that if the executor of the estate knows or has reason to know of a creditor, then that published notice doesn't carry any weight with regard to that creditor. So for example, if you see a bill, if I'm the executor, you know, let's say my mom and dad passed away and I'm at their house after they've passed away and I see a bill for the doctor or for the dentist, then I know that there's a bill out there.
You know it exists.
Right? That publication will not cover – it will not bar that kind of bill. You have to send – actual notice to those doctors and so forth.
Yeah, because I can't imagine there's a whole lot of dentists and doctors sitting there, hey, I haven't been paid, let's check. And
you think they're not checking if they've been paid or not?
Well, I know that they're checking to see if they've been paid or not, but I don't know if they're necessarily saying, hey, let's see if that person has passed away.
Right. Yeah, well, that's a good point. So legally, that publication in the newspaper won't necessarily cover if, you know, like doctor's bills, if the doctor can prove that the executor knew or should have known of the bill, then the publishing doesn't do anything for them. They have longer than 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you get a list. The executor should give a list to their attorney of all of the bills of which they're aware, and then you publish notice in the newspaper and you send actual notice of the probate to those creditors of which you are aware.
Okay.
And so anyway, that gives you 4 months to kind of figure things out, pay bills as they come in. If there's illegitimate debts that are filed with the estate, then you can, you know, there's a process to disallow those. And then after that 4 month, you can also, during that period, you can sell, if there's a house, you can sell the house. You know, you can, the executor should marshal the assets, you know, gather the assets together. Be careful with tax. There's some tax issues to be aware of there. So anyway, they should have advice from a CPA and probably a financial planner and probably an attorney.
Somebody that's dealt with estates.
And have some advice there. And so generally, the bulk of assets in general, again, there's caveats or exceptions to everything, I suppose, but generally the bulk of the assets are not going to be distributed out for at least probably 5 or 6 or 7 months after someone passes away. And so every now and then I'll get a call from someone whose loved one passed away maybe 2 weeks ago, and they'll say, hey, my brother's in charge of the estate. He hasn't done, I haven't gotten anything yet. You know, you're probably not going to get anything for, you know, a number of months.
Several months, yeah.
Now, from the executor's perspective, the mistake that many executors make is failing to communicate early and often. So as an executor, what you should do is you should communicate a lot with the other heirs of the estate. Let them know what the timeline is, what you're planning to do.
Where you're at in the process.
Where you're at in the process, exactly. Because that can help alleviate a lot of problems that arise. So in general, getting back to that question of how long does a probate take? You know, I would say in general, when both spouses have passed away, a probate takes, you know, between probably 6 months and a year.
And that's for completely wrap up.
Done. Yeah. And at the end, there's a lot of details that we're not talking about here about what happens. But after all the debts are paid, then the executor typically will send a letter to all the heirs saying, hey, here's what's left over. You know, they should send an accounting that shows what they started with and mm-hmm. what was paid, what money came into the estate and so forth. And then they will send that accounting to the heirs and say, okay, your share of what's remaining is X. If you agree, you know, sign this document stating that you released the estate from liability and you know, you've received what you're entitled to. And then they send that in and then you send a check to them. Now, you might say, Chris, if you're listening closely, which I'm afraid most people don't listen to me closely because they get real bored as soon as I start talking. But you seem interested.
Oh, I am.
You're good
on the edge of my seat.
You're good at pretending. You're good at pretending. You may have noticed that I said you send a letter saying you're going to get X amount of dollars.
Uh-huh.
And then the heir signs what's called a receipt and release saying, yeah, I've received what I'm entitled to.
But I haven't.
But they haven't. Exact. See?
Yeah.
Sharp.
See?
You are sharp.
Edge
are,
of my seat.
You are one of the sharper knives in the drawer. That is the reason that we do that is because a lot of the time if heirs receive – their assets, they get all their share of the estate without having signed that receipt and release. There's just no incentive for them to sign it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and not that they won't sign it, but it's just,
sure.
It's not pressing. It's not urgent, right? Whereas if you say, hey, you're about to get, you know, $30,000, you know, if you agree with that, sign
show
this
me
document.
Where to sign.
Yeah, exactly. And to be clear, if someone signs that saying they've received that money, and they don't. Let's say they sign that receipt and release, send it in, and then the executor never sends them the money. Then obviously a judge is not going to hold that receipt and release against them.
Sure.
Now, the executor, obviously, it's in their best interest to prove that they
sent the check.
Actually sent the check, you know, yeah. That the check has been cashed and so forth.
Here's a copy.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the probate process. I know we've probably gone, we're probably towards the end here, but probate is not horrible. I would say it's not a horrible thing in Idaho. It is kind of nice to avoid probate. And we'll talk about in later episodes, how could you avoid probate?
Yeah,
there's
how can
various
I avoid
ways.
This if that's a 6 month.
Yeah.
And, you know.
There's time.
Whether it's so, $1,500 or $4,000 or, you know, I'm California and it's $80,000.
California, everybody, I think everyone should avoid probate in California.
Yeah.
It's just so, and
so
New
we
York.
Definitely will need to talk about this.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing to talk about. So we should also talk more about wills, what are involved in wills, and I think we should talk about revocable trust, but that's probably for another, you know, for a later episode. And I'm hoping that you practice saying my name correctly.
Yeah, I'm going to have to practice that long and otherwise I'll just revert back to Dave.
I might start calling you Charis.
Okay.
Because that's how yours is spelled.
C-H-R-I-S. That is exactly how it is spelled.
Tris. Yeah.
You can call me Tris.
Tris.
Okay.
Good to see you, Tris.
Well, this has been the Bengal Financial Literacy Podcast with Tris.
And Durward.
And Durward. With Tris and Durward. Well, Dave, thank you for being on the show yet again.
That was a pleasure.
And we are going to have you back again because, like you said, we got to talk about wills and trusts. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And we would love to have you back.
Thank you.
The Bengal Financial Literacy Show, hosted by ISU's Chris Chatwin, can be heard on the second Monday of every month at 7 p.m. here on KISU. You can also hear this or all past episodes of the program at kisu.org/programs.